हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। So then this Brahmin who had visited the same house as the Pandavas are staying in, then in his visit, then he's, as a guest there, and because they're traveling and all that, then a lot of times they like to, try to do, some kind of reciprocation. So then they'll tell all kinds of interesting stories from what they've seen, because, they'll travel through all the different countries, all different situations, see different kinds of amazing things, because as Brahmins and sages, they can go to places and see things that many others may or may not see. So then it's always a nice thing. So it'll always be something, and they'll give the angle from the Shastra and what should to do and the proper behavior and, all these things. So it's always, it's an interesting thing, and at the same time you learn in the culture and all those kind of aspects. So then in him explaining about the up-and-coming Swayamvar for Draupadi, then he's explaining how she's come from the fire, and so then the Pandavas want to know how that is, because they're from the demigods. So here's another interesting thing. Anybody would want to know that, but they especially, because then it's somebody who's similar to them. And then And so then they he tells the story, and then the whole thing about the enmity between Drona and Drupad. And then how then he gets Yaja and Upayaja to perform the sacrifice. Upayaja is the more powerful one, but Yaja is the one who will, arrange, and that is the elder brother. And so then everything's ready for the sacrifice, but instead of transferring, the particular souls that are there into the womb of the wife of Drupad, since she said she was unclean, she wasn't prepared for how it was going to work out, Then they said, okay, can you bring from the fire? So then the offering that they were going to give to her so that she would drink it and then like this have these children, then is thrown into the fire, and then from the fire they come forth. So when they come forth and the heavenly voice then appeared, and it said, this dark-skinned beauty will be the best of all women, and she will cause the destructions of the world's warriors. The boy shall be called Dhrishtadyumna, and he shall slay Drona. Drona heard about this prophecy, but considered destiny to be supreme. He nevertheless agreed to train Drupad's son in martial arts, because he's going to be killed by him anyway, whether he trains him or not. It's not that if he doesn't train him, he won't kill him. Right? So that's what he said. If it's destiny, that's how it is, then he's born to get, he will kill him. So now he performs his duty as a Brahmin and trains him. And so then that will work out very nicely. So he gets that benefit of having trained and everything like this. And he's also, Dhrishtadyumna will be famous as Drona's disciple. And it's also is that Drona being so qualified and all that, he wouldn't want to be, killed by someone who's unqualified. So then here, however it will work, or the battle and things like that, it'll be something very grand. So then Drona's not worried, because it's going to happen anyway. And he did this also in consideration that he took half of Drupad's kingdom, so then he should train his son to be, the best, so he'll be the most powerful warrior in his kingdom. And that way he can pay something back. The ascetic stopped. After hearing that Dhrishtadyumna would kill their beloved teacher, the Pandavas felt as if their hearts had been pierced, right? Because they have a great affection for him and understand how it all worked. Kunti saw their perplexity and, after they had retired for the night, said to Yudhishthira, "We have lived here for many months. I think it would be wise to leave now. You are all restless. I also sense that you desire to go to Panchala for Draupadi Swayamvar." Kunti had seen her son's eyes open wide when the ascetic had described Draupadi's celestial beauty. Therefore, she suggested that they leave the next day for Panchala. All five brothers agreed to her proposal, and the following morning they made their farewells to the Brahmin and his family, walking in line with Kunti in the middle. They then headed towards Panchala, traveling again through the forest. Okay? So, you see again when they're traveling, then that's just the standard thing. There'll be someone at the front, you know, to see the protect like that, and also someone at the back to protect. And then Kunti would be in the middle. So it's just how you protect. You know, you don't leave, okay, the kid's just trailing behind, they can disappear. They're always in the middle. You know, whatever needs to be protected is in the middle. Even like, let's say you're in the train station, right, and you're waiting for the train. Where does the luggage go? In the middle. It doesn't go out on the side, otherwise it disappears like that. Does that make sense? So anything you want to put, it's in the middle. It's kept so it's in a safe place. Yes. On the first evening of their journey, as they sat around their fire, Vyasa arrived. Upon seeing him, the Pandavas prostrated themselves at his feet. They then stood with their palms folded as Vyasa offered them blessings. When everyone was seated, Vyasadeva said, right, because he'll come, he'll be received, he'll everything like that, they'll offer their obeisances, say this and that, you know, all the proper etiquettes. Then after everybody's seated properly, after these preliminary gestures and all that, now he will speak, right? Because these etiquettes are, they're just the culture, they're natural ways of reciprocation. That's the whole point of the Vedic system is, what's the natural way of reciprocating in relationship? Because for Krishna, then the most important element is how he reciprocates with others. Right? It means he has all six opulences. That's the meaning of Bhagavan, one who has all six opulences. So having all six opulences, what's the point of them? Right? If you're just God, you have them, great. But it's using them to interact with the devotees and reciprocate. So that means Krishna is using the opulence the devotees are using. Because he has opulences, naturally the devotees will be using the same opulences for serving Krishna. So it's the basis of relationship. It's the basis of interacting. Just like the parents have a house, and in there's furniture and other facilities. And so the children and the parents reciprocate based on those facilities. You know, they sit on the couch together, or they're eating, you know, food together, or, you know, using all the different facilities that are there. But they belong to the parents, but it's all about how that relates to everyone else. So the parents have the house and all facility for how that can be used in interaction between themselves, them and the children, the family and other families and other relatives. That's just how it works. So for Krishna, then, that's the whole principle. So then how you deal with how each opulence is used in interaction so that it gives the best experience for whoever's involved within that interaction, then those are natural spontaneous attitudes of the Brajvasis, because they're following the path of where the flavor is. You know, it's just like, let's say you're eating, and you pick up something in it, and it has a certain flavor, and so then you're going to follow that flavor. So now you eat another preparation; it doesn't have the flavor. Then by putting some salt or mixing it with something else or doing something, you bring it to that flavor. It's not a rule. It's that flavor is there, and there's certain things you do, you get the flavor. But when we say the Brajabhasis are spontaneous, they're not following the rules, doesn't mean the rules aren't obtained. It means they're not using the rule to get what they want. You know, that expression of love for Krishna. They're just following the love itself, the taste itself. Does that make sense? So they follow it naturally, spontaneously. Just that love for Krishna, they just know it moves here, it moves there. They just see how it moves and follow it. So then, but when that comes down to Vaikuntha, Then it becomes formalized because of the majesty, so then you have the rules and regulations. Then when those rules and regulations are then used, forget those tastes for Krishna. They'll have a very nice full experience in prema, but it will be based on the majesty of God's opulences and how they're using opulence to serve the Lord and all that. Well, in Braj, the opulences are just what they're using, so it's not about opulence, it's about just about Krishna. Well, Vaikuntha, the Lord, the Supreme Lord, opulences and that service. They'll have that formality. Now, when it comes through into the material world, all this knowledge and technique and facility, then because here people are interested in using these without God, then they just try to use it. They follow the taste of what they're going to get out of it. But the problem is, in doing that, they won't be satisfied because the natural thing of the living entity is relationship with the Lord. And so, therefore, you have to do devotional service. This is in connection with the Lord. We don't know the path of bhakti. We don't know the path of prema. So therefore, we have to follow the rules and regulations. So the rules and regulations for bhakti, when you formalize it, bhakti, the rules there are the same thing that come through into the material world as the recommended pious activities. But the point is they're not here for piety. They're here to use in Krishna's service. So we will use them because it's pious, it's good, you get a benefit, I use it, and they're connected to Krishna. But with time, the taste for serving Krishna becomes more important than the benefits I get. Then it turns into, then it turns into that doing things for the Lord. And then it's just that pleasing the Lord becomes the main thing. And then it takes on the spontaneous aspect. So you see, it's one line. Krishna says in the Gita, there's only one path. And so you're either moving towards Krishna or away from Krishna. There's only one path. But it's just a matter of if you're moving towards Krishna and how far towards Krishna you'll go. Right? So as Gaudiyas, then the idea is to get to Braja. And so then, and serve Radha and Krishna and Braja. So that's the full manifestation. So you see, here's that so following these etiquettes and all that we follow, these are just the natural ways that people interact. So even like Uddhava goes to Vrindavan, to Braj, to visit the Brajavasi. So when he comes and he's greeted by Nanda Maharaj, and that, it'll be the same kind of etiquettes. So these are the etiquettes of the spiritual world. Sometimes when we say, oh, they're artificial in this, or, we're Westerners, these are not the way we do things and all that. But it's not about us. It's about how to please Krishna and how to use his energies to serve him. So that's the basis of it. So the Mahabharata will nicely show how all these different etiquettes and all these different situations and the different morality and ethics and are used in a very nice way, in a proper way. But the stories themselves, though they're about the Pandavas, so they're devotees and all that. But everybody will be attracted. So you see, as devotees like the Mahabharata, the non-devotees like the Mahabharata. Like this. Everybody will get the etiquette. So the bottom line is you get the etiquette. Then the next thing is performance of duties, without desire for results. Next thing is that, you're doing it with where you understand that you're the soul, and therefore that performance of the duties without result, naishkamya, then will liberate you. But then farther than that is performing the duties because that's the way to please Krishna. And then the farthest, the spontaneous, you just want to please Krishna, so you naturally do these things. So it's just, so we get used to it now because we're not used to the lifestyle of the spiritual world. We're used to anything but that. So that's why the scriptures give things and recommend. So that they do these things, this is the way it is. Some guest comes, you receive them and all this first and all that, and then once everything's settled, then you get down to business. So there's no rush. I mean, if it's an emergency, the place is on fire, then somebody runs in, you just say it's fire, and then you take care of the fire. Then after the fire, then you sit nicely and everybody's out, and then you get down to business. But the point is that first you take care of everybody, then there's business. When everyone was seated, Vyasadeva said, O conquerors of foes, Are you following the path of virtue and joined in the scriptures? Do you worship the Brahmins? I hope you always honor those worthy of respect. Right, so here he's pointing out the, you know, very important aspects is that you're following what's the virtue, you know, the proper things that are the scriptures give. That the scripture is establishing what to do, and that's more important than just what everybody feels should be done. So ultimately, everybody's looking for Krishna, because everybody in following the virtues is going to go after one of those six opulences or a combination. The whole reason for it is going to be that. And so then that affection that they have, it ultimately is for Krishna. So then by following the virtues in scripture, but in context of pleasing Krishna, that's then the proper. If you're just doing it for karma and jnana, it's better than someone who doesn't, but it's still not devotional. Do you worship the Brahmins, right? Because they follow the scriptures, they represent the scriptures, they have to be respected. Hope you always honor those worthy of your respect, so the elders and the aged and those who are powerful or wealthy or beautiful, you know, whatever, anybody with any of the varieties of opulences of the Lord and the relations and sacrifice and knowledge like this. The Rishi spoke for some time, giving the attentive princes various instructions. At the end of his discourse, Vyasa told them that they should try to win the hand of the princess of Panchala. Her father was setting an archery test in order to find her qualified husband. Arjuna should enter the contest. Right, so the idea is that they should try to win her hand. Arjuna should enter, so then he'll, you know, then the idea would naturally be then he has his wife, and then other situations will come up, and the other brothers, and they'll all win the hand of some princess, and then they'll all, then this way, then they all get married. Because up to this point, they were students, they graduated. Right now, they're acting in the capacity of snataks, but they should be, you know, at some point getting married. They're kshatriyas, that's their. Vyasadeva then stood up to leave, and after again receiving obeisances from the Pandavas, vanished into the woods. Reassured by Vyasadeva's directions, the brothers continued their journey the next day with joyous hearts. Right, so but they before they were just interested, and maybe we should go to see because their mother's saying, okay, something's here. Now Vyasadeva has confirmed it and said, no, they should enter the contest and actually try to win her hand. So now they're very enthusiastic. They walked day and night, eager to arrive at Panchal in time for the Swayamvar. Right? So the eagerness because, one, it's something to do, and that they've been staying at this place for so long. But the other thing is they're young men, and it's, you know, that they're of marriageable age, and here's a very qualified girl. And it's a girl who's of their nature, as we said. She's coming out of the fire, the heavenly voice is saying something, so there's something divine about it. Their birth is divine, so they naturally, you know, because marriage should be amongst those who are equal, right, who have a similar nature. That's what you want to see, is that the nature is there, that kind of the experience, the background, so there's something the relatable that they can then work together nicely. They walked day and night, eager to arrive at Panchal in time for the Swayamvar. It was just after nightfall, several days later, when they came upon the gently flowing waters of the Ganges, right, because this chapter is about the Gandharva Angaraparna. Arjuna was leading the party with a torch in his hand to light their way. They all bowed respectfully to the sacred river before walking along her banks, searching for a place to cross. Right, so they come down to the Ganges at night, right, so they say it's just after nightfall. So it's just they got instead of looking for some place to cross, I think they want to get to the other side, they want to then settle there. Suddenly, from out of the darkness, they heard a loud voice, "Halt! Who dares approach this river at such a time? The night belongs to yakshas, gandharvas, and rakshasas. Only during the first portion of the night, the twilight time, are the other beings allowed to bathe. You appear to be human beings, therefore return the way you have come." Right, so there's rules on this because the idea is Krishna is taking care of everybody. So all these are you know, so the humans, the yakshas, gandharvas, rakshasas, they're all part of Krishna's creation. So the river Ganges, you know, or you know, any river, then is used by everyone to take their bath and do all their various activities that they do. And so then everybody has their chance, so you don't disturb each other. So then we see during the when you have the Brahma Muhurta, from there through until it actually gets dark at night. That's for humans. But after it gets dark, until the Brahma Muhurta, that's for these other Wallas. That's their time. So he's pointing out, why are you coming at this time? This is not your time. Right? Because once it's gotten dark, you're not supposed to go into the water. So it has to be like we see in the Krishna book. Nanda Baba somehow or another got up a little extra earlier one day and went down before that time to bathe. And so then it was a problem. So we see that everybody has their time. Krishna takes care of everybody. So during the twilight, so he says during the first part of the night, the twilight, so they're counting the twilight as the first part of the night as opposed to the last part of the day. Right. A shining figure emerged from the waters, rose into the air, and descended onto a golden chariot. Clasping a huge bow, he continued to address them in a thunderous voice. I am the Gandharva Angaraparna, friend of Kuvera, treasure of the gods. I am bathing here. Not even the gods or demons would dare to come to this river when I am bathing. How have you humans been so bold? Leave quickly, or I will kill you. I fear no one. Right, Ko? They may not have known, so he's giving the doubt. As long as you turn around and leave, then, you know, everything's going to be okay. But, you know, if they don't, then there'll be a fight. And, you know, being a Gandharva, they're generally more powerful than the humans. And being a friend of Kuvera, we can see his position is very great. So even other demigods and demons won't bother him. So he seems to be quite a famous among the Gandharvas. Arjuna could not tolerate the Gandharva's haughty speech, right? So this is a Kshatriya. You wretch! The rivers and mountains are never barred to anyone at any time. There's no such thing as a special time when we are not allowed to approach this sacred river. Nor do we care for your threats. Right? So, only the weak would fear someone like you. Make way, because we are now going to bathe in this river. Right? So, they were going to cross. But when crossing, they bathe and things like this. So, he's pointing out that the sacred river doesn't have those rules. Right? The sacred river can be approached any time. So the sacred river, a well, you know, then the Himalayan mountains, these can be approached at any time. Like you see, as the sages live in the Himalayas, it's nighttime, so you can't say, it's okay, they can be there in the day, then night they have to leave, right? So then that first village right down at the bottom, right, whatever it is, you know, I say, what's that called, Deva... I can't remember. It's above Hrishikesh. Yeah, Devaprayag. Like they are all there, and then the day they all run up into the like this and get as far as they can, but then before night they have to be back down. No, it's just Himalayas, the Ganges, you know, a well. So that's like the hand pump. We can use it any time of the day or night, so that's allowed. And the Ganga we can go to. But other rivers and that and other lakes, then generally you have these rules. But so he's pointing out, one, you're wrong. And, you know, from that side, as you're quoting the scriptures and all that this is, you know, the rule. And you're wrong on this account because it's the Ganges. And two, you're making all these threats to us. And, you know, we're not going to tolerate those threats. You know, he had just nicely asked, you know, please, you know, this is not the time. And they would hear. But he being who he is, and he says it this way. Because I guess by looking, you know, and then they being who they are, you know, so, you know, it makes for... These are the stories of interest. Yes. Angaraparna seemed to blaze with anger. He drew his bow and immediately shot 100 arrows at the brothers. Arjuna moved with blinding speed and struck down all those shafts simply with the torch he was holding. He laughed at the Gandharva. Do not attempt to frighten those skilled in warfare, right? Because it's one thing, is he just thinks that they're humans, how much do they know? You know, here's Arjuna, right? You know, the Pandavas, they're eternal associates of the Lord. They're born from the demigods. He's Nara of Naranarayan Rishi. You know, when the demigods can't defeat the demons, then Naranarayan Rishi come out and they do the job. You know, so, yeah. Arjuna moved. He laughed at the Gandharva. Your weapons simply vanish like froth on the ocean when hurled at more powerful opponents. Oh, Sky Ranger, right, because he can move in the sky. I know you are superior to men in prowess. Therefore, I shall use a celestial missile against you. Right? So I won't just use regular weaponry. I'll use celestial because you are, you know, you move in the skies. You're a celestial like that. So it would be appropriate. The fire weapon I will now discharge was first given to Bharadwaj by the celestial sage Brihaspati. Bharadwaj then gave it to Agnivesha, who gave it to my preceptor, Drona. Drona gave it to me. Guard yourself from his power if you can. Chanting the incantations to invoke the Agneastra, Arjuna imbued his torch with his tremendous power. So he could take anything, like you see sometimes they take a blade of grass and put that into it, you know, and then just, you know, throw it at someone and or touch them or anything like this. So he just put it in the torch. Through the torch, now it's the Agneastra, it's not just a torch. Chanting the incantations, angrily threw it at Angarnaparna, and his chariot was immediately destroyed, burnt black. The Gandharva fainted from the missile's force and fell headlong from the smoking chariot. So that's the thing, the celestial weapons then has power, they're powerful. So it'd be like using regular weapons here with the people here. So it's that kind of equal thing. That's why it said never use celestial weapons on regular, ordinary people, because it's just beyond, you know. Arjuna seized him by his hair, which was adorned with garlands of flowers, and dragged him before Yudhishthira, right? Because he's the elder brother. He's you know, for them he's the king. Suddenly, a celestial woman rushed out of the water and approached Yudhishthira. Right? She didn't go to Arjuna because Arjuna's just doing his job. The two fought, and now he's taking him to his authority, his elder brother. So therefore, if she wants to address what's going on, she has to approach Yudhishthira. She said, "Exalted one, I am Kumbhinashi, Angarapana's wife. Please bestow your mercy upon me and set him free. I seek your protection." Right? Because now if they kill her husband, then she'll have no husband, so she won't be there. So she's saying, protect me by giving me my husband back. The Gandharva came to his senses and sat up before Yudhishthira, who said to him, "O Gandharva, who would slay one who has been vanquished in battle, who stands deprived of his fame, who is unable to protect himself, and who is protected by a woman? You may go." Right? So he's showing all these different reasons that you do. That means he's been vanquished in battle. He's been defeated, so you don't kill him. You know, this kind of, you see in these modern context where they defeat somebody and then they kill everybody. No, once they're defeated, then they're to be protected. You know, you're careful about them, but they're not to be. Otherwise, how will they have faith? Now, you've defeated them and all that. Now they know your prowess. Now, if they accept that and you deal with them nicely, then they're going to be very proper, deal as properly as citizens or allies or anything like that. You killed them, then point is no one will trust you. You know? And so that's the difficult. Just like you see, is let's say even a mouse, if it's cornered, it's very dangerous. So small. But if it thinks it has nothing to lose, it's very dangerous. It'll do things that you wouldn't expect it to. So if you think that if we'll go out and fight our best, but if we're defeated, then these people will protect and they'll see that everything is properly done righteously, then they'll fight to their best, but they won't go beyond that. They won't go into, you know, insanity mode. And then, you see, he's deprived of his fame because, you know, he has that chariot, he's been here, he's fell on the ground, he's been dragged by his hair, you know, all these things like that. Unable to protect himself because he went unconscious, so you don't kill them at that point. And who's protected by a woman? A woman has come out and said, please, don't kill this person because, you know, it's important to them. So then they're protected. So you have to respect that. If you respect women, they say don't kill it, you have to respect that. You may go. Angarapana stood and offered his respects to Yudhishthira. He spoke with humility. My pride has been crushed by your younger brother, right? Because he dragged him to Yudhishthira. So Yudhishthira is making the proclamation, not who defeated him. So he understands that's the younger brother, this is the elder brother, right? Because that's also the religious thing. They follow the elder brother. My celestial chariot lies burnt to ashes. I had been known as Chitrarata, one of the beautiful chariot. From now on, I shall call myself Dhagarata, he of the burnt chariot. Angarapana thanked Arjuna for not killing him, even though able. In return for Arjuna's mercy, in other words, he threw it just enough, he just put enough potency to just destroy the chariot and knock him out of the chariot. He could have done more and just completely devastated him, but he didn't. Angarapana offered him the divine knowledge possessed by the Gandharvas, along with a team of celestial horses. Smiling, Angarapana said, "This knowledge, known as Chakshushi, will give you the ability to see anything within the three worlds, along with that thing's intrinsic nature. It is knowledge that gives the Gandharvas the powers that make them superior to men." So we'll continue with this tomorrow and hear about this, you know, we'll discuss this knowledge and then further on how they respond. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.